Die Übersetzung von Jans Stimme vom Deutschen ins Englische wurde mit einer KI erstellt.
What does it mean to take responsibility during wartime? As a member of parliament, as a combat medic, as an entrepreneur, as a scientist or as a mother? In Ukraine, women have taken on roles and responsibilities that were often traditionally associated with men. They drive tractors, run businesses, serve in the military, help the wounded, and care for their families while many men are fighting at the front. One of them says,
"And me personally, I believe that rebuild and reconstruct Ukraine in the future after the war will be finished, it will be on women's shoulder."
In Crisis Mode, the podcast from Conflict Zones with Jan Jessen.
Anna Pertova is a member of the Ukrainian parliament. She serves on the budget committee. Since the beginning of Russia's full-scale invasion, she has also been working on issues concerning veterans, people with war-related disabilities, and the families of missing soldiers and prisoners of war. Her assessment is certainly a political statement, but it also reflects something that comes through in many personal stories. During wartime, women not only take on new responsibilities, they also hold together several different areas of life at the same time. Hello, I'm Jan Jessen, political editor-in-chief and war and crisis reporter for Funke Media Group. You can find my articles on our digital platforms. For this episode, I spoke with six women in Ukraine. They live in the capital, Kyiv, near the front line, or in the south of the country, and their roles could hardly be more different. One of them works in parliament and tries to help the families of prisoners of war. Another served as a combat medic at the front herself. A professor develops orthopedic footwear for wounded soldiers. An entrepreneur is running a cosmetics brand through the war. A goat farmer is fighting to protect her animals and her children. And a marine biologist advises mine clearance teams in the Black Sea. I'd like to start with Anna Pertova because her work particularly clearly shows how the war reaches into areas that, at first glance, seem far removed from the battlefield. Anna Pertova is 44 years old and comes from Dnipro, a major city in the eastern part of central Ukraine. She is a member of the Servant of the People Party, the party that was formed around Volodymyr Zelensky, the president, and is also the governing party. She serves on the budget committee of the Ukrainian parliament. Before entering politics, she advised businesses, particularly on issues related to digitalization. Since the Russian invasion, she has also been dealing with the consequences of the war. She is particularly focused on people returning from captivity, the wounded, and the families of soldiers whose fate remains unclear. When women or mothers ask her whether she knows where their husbands and sons are, she often has no answer. According to Ukrainian officials, Russia does not reliably confirm which soldiers are being held in captivity. International organizations have only limited access. We heard this again and again on our travels when we spoke with former Ukrainian prisoners of war. We'll put the relevant episode in the show notes for you. Anna, therefore, does not just talk about individual cases. She is talking about a political system that is failing to deliver on its promise to protect prisoners of war.
We have a lot of job to do here inside the country. Like, you know, we need to accept special laws to help the families, to organize medical support of them and other things. But this is the work that we can do by ourselves, and we are trying to organize everything. For me, the biggest challenge is to work with international organizations, to work with international partners and other countries. As, for example, in the world, everybody is still thinking that there are Geneva Convention that are responsible for the rules, how countries behave with the prisoners of war, but they don't work anymore. Russia has joined them, has signed them many years ago, but we see that they just don't care about it. And we as international, as other countries, we need to talk together what we are doing with this. We just need to accept the fact that they don't work anymore. International laws doesn't work anymore. And we need to think what to do. As we still have no idea how many people are in Russian prisons. They don't give us the name. Again, it's written in Geneva protocol that other countries need to confirm how many people and who they have. They don't do it. We don't have access to check their situation, what conditions they have in prisons. We don't have this. And we need to work together with other countries, with European Union, United States, and international authorities to change this all protocols and start them to work.
Anna describes a very specific problem here. Russia does not disclose the names of prisoners and does not confirm how many people are actually being held in Russian prisons. That is a huge problem because around 100,000 Ukrainian service members are currently considered missing. And of course, their families want to know what has happened to them, where they are, whether they are lying dead somewhere on the battlefield, or whether they are being held in Russian prisoner of war camps. The Geneva Conventions and international humanitarian law establish minimum standards for the treatment of prisoners of war. These include registering prisoners of war and granting the International Committee of the Red Cross access to them. When these rules are not enforced, families face a double uncertainty. As I said, they do not know whether their loved ones are dead, whether they have been wounded, or whether they are being held in Russian captivity. Anna is trying to help at the national level. She works on legislation, medical care, and financial support for affected families. At the same time, she encounters an international problem over which she has very little influence herself. The rules exist, but Russia disregards them. And this is not limited to Russia. We see it again and again in other crisis and conflict zones as well, where international law is being trampled underfoot. Whether it's wars in Africa, the war in Gaza, or the current war against Iran involving the United States, international law is eroding everywhere. In her work, she also encounters people who have lost their sight in the war. One of them, a young man named Mykola, was, in a sense, the catalyst for her work. She told me that she met him relatively early in the Russian invasion. Shortly after he volunteered to serve, he was severely wounded. He lost both arms and his eyesight. Anna arranged for him to receive prostheses, but of course she cannot give him back his sight. What she can do is try to ensure that people like him do not disappear from the political field of vision. Then Anna talks about the role of women.
It's very big war. It's very big role, as men are doing their great job to protect our country. But actually now Ukraine is number one country in the world with the amount of women that also serve in army. We have more than 70,000 of women now in the army. Women are creating and supporting business and work here, our economy. They are doing a lot of jobs that they didn't do before the war. We just didn't need this as war, as men were working as plumbers or in agricultural jobs. But now women has learned how to do it and to do it. They continue to grow up children, no matter that they need work more and more now. And me personally, I believe that rebuild and reconstruct Ukraine in the future after the war will be finished, it will be on women's shoulder.
This, of course, is not a statement that women are inherently stronger than men. It is simply about the consequences of war. Many men are fighting, are wounded, have been killed, or are being held in captivity. And as a result, women have to take on responsibilities that were previously often shared among several people. Anna says that after the war, Ukraine will have to rebuild more than just houses, roads, and bridges. It will also have to rebuild families and businesses, support the return of veterans, and integrate people who have suffered severe injuries. Another particularly interesting question after the war will be what happens when all the people who have fled abroad, women, men, and children alike, return to Ukraine and encounter a society that has spent 4 years, or probably considerably longer, living through war. How will that society function then? And women will certainly play a major role in that as well. In the past, I have repeatedly met psychologists and psychiatrists and talked to them specifically about this issue, and I believe this will be an extremely challenging task for society as a whole, but especially for women in Ukraine. The next woman I spoke with works in a place where the consequences of injuries are visible every day, in military training. Olena Dembitska calls herself Lena. Her military call sign is Lisa. Lisa means little fox. She is a combat medic in the 3rd Company of the 31st Mechanized Brigade and now trains new soldiers in tactical medicine. In the past, she told me, she went to the front lines herself. She treated wounded soldiers and evacuated people from dangerous situations. Today, her battalion commander has decided that she should pass on her combat experience to younger colleagues. We met her near a training center where she told us about her past and why she decided to join the military in the first place. She said that it had always been a challenge for her. She also told us in our pre-interview that she had always been fascinated by medicine. At some point, she volunteered to join the military. She also met her husband, who himself serves in the 31st Brigade. As I said, she initially worked as a combat medic and had some very intense experiences. Now, because her battalion commander told her that she should no longer go to the front, she doesn't simply teach according to a fixed curriculum. Instead, she works with the March Protocol for Tactical Medicine, while also adapting it to the conditions she herself experienced on the front.
Back in the good old days, I used to be out on the positions providing medical aid and saving people. But now, by the decision of a previous battalion commander, who said that I had done enough and that it was time to pass my combat experience on to the younger guys, my role has changed. So now I do my best to teach, and I do it not only strictly according to the March Tactical Medicine Protocol, but also drawing on my own experience and lessons learned. I make certain adjustments where necessary so that the training is as close as possible to real conditions on the front line.
This, of course, is not a statement that women are inherently stronger than men. It is simply about the consequences of war. Many men are fighting, are wounded, have been killed, or are being held in captivity. And as a result, women have to take on responsibilities that were previously often shared among several people. Anna says that after the war, Ukraine will have to rebuild more than just houses, roads, and bridges. It will also have to rebuild families and businesses, support the return of veterans, and integrate people who have suffered severe injuries. Another particularly interesting question after the war will be what happens when all the people who have fled abroad, women, men, and children alike, return to Ukraine and encounter a society that has spent 4 years, or probably considerably longer, living through war. How will that society function then? And women will certainly play a major role in that as well. In the past, I have repeatedly met psychologists and psychiatrists and talked to them specifically about this issue. And I believe this will be an extremely challenging task for society as a whole, but especially for women in Ukraine. The next woman I spoke with works in a place where the consequences of injuries are visible every day, in military training. Olena Dembitska calls herself Lena. Her military call sign is Lisa. Lisa means little fox. She is a combat medic in the 3rd Company of the 31st Mechanized Brigade and now trains new soldiers in tactical medicine. In the past, she told me, she went to the front lines herself. She treated wounded soldiers and evacuated people from dangerous situations. Today, her battalion commander has decided that she should pass on her combat experience to younger colleagues. We met her near a training center, where she told us about her past and why she decided to join the military in the first place. She said that it had always been a challenge for her. She also told us in our pre-interview that she had always been fascinated by medicine. At some point, she volunteered to join the military. She also met her husband, who himself serves in the 31st Brigade. As I said, she initially worked as a combat medic and had some very intense experiences. Now, because her battalion commander told her that she should no longer go to the front, she doesn't simply teach according to a fixed curriculum. Instead, she works with the March Protocol for Tactical Medicine, while also adapting it to the conditions she herself experienced on the front.
The role of a man and a woman? Well, basically, we should have absolutely equal rights. There is no difference between a boy and a girl. Being a woman does not mean you do not go to the positions. If your job requires you to go there, then you go. In my case, if I have to go to the positions to provide medical aid to the guys in my unit, to evacuate them and save them, then that's what I do. And how it turns out in the end is another matter, whether they are our guys or not. But who else is going to go?
Lena emphasizes that the conditions are constantly changing. New drones, new weapons, different ways of evacuating. What worked yesterday may already not be enough today. We've also talked a lot about this on the podcast, about how much has changed on the front, particularly because of drone warfare. We can also link to relevant episodes in the show notes. So her job isn't just about medical training. She also tries to mentally prepare the soldiers for what they're going to face. Some are scared, others try to suppress the danger, and some openly say that they don't want to fight. That's exactly what frustrates Lena, especially when mobilized men come to her training and say, "This is not my war." Despite her disappointment, she continues working with them because she knows that in a real-life situation, a soldier like that isn't only putting himself at risk. If he doesn't help, it could potentially be fatal for a wounded soldier. Lena also says that fundamentally, women and men should have the same rights and responsibilities in war.
Естественно, война меняет очень всех и многих, ну, то есть полностью каждого человека меняет.
Well, of course, war changes everyone. It changes every person. As for me, I would say that I am probably still the same person I always was, but perhaps I have become more open and more confident. I feel braver and stronger. I feel much better about myself. In a way, your character reveals itself more. In civilian life, you are quieter and calmer. And here, you can still be that way, but at the same time be stronger, tougher, and never show your weakness. Even when it is hard, when you have no strength left, when you think, I can't do this, I don't want to do this, you pull yourself together, take a breath in and out, and remind yourself that it has to be done. If it has to be done, then it has to be done.
Lena put it pretty matter-of-factly, without making a big deal out of it. For her, the question isn't whether a woman belongs at the front. The question is what role she has and whether she can do that job. But her own work has changed as well, and you could tell that she wasn't entirely comfortable talking about it. She was deployed continuously for a long time, treated more than 300 wounded soldiers, and was herself injured by a piece of shrapnel that hit her knee. Since then, she says, that's one of the reasons why her battalion commander told her that she should focus exclusively on training for now. Since then, she sometimes gets panic attacks, or at least her hands start shaking. And, well, she says that, because of what is clearly post-traumatic stress, she can no longer work at the front. One of the deployments she told us about was the first one she ever took part in. Her platoon commander was seriously wounded in the leg by shrapnel. She then worked her way all the way to the front under mortar fire, treated him, and got him back to safety. Ever since then, he's called her his little sister. And a few months later, she had spent nearly a year and a half actually in heavy combat, she found herself in a battle situation near Pokrovsk. And apparently it was so intense, with so many drones in the air and so many explosions going off around her, that she clearly came away from it with some kind of psychological trauma. And as I said, that's why she can't work at the front anymore. But those experiences are also the reason she doesn't train her fellow soldiers straight out of a textbook. She knows how quickly a medical situation can change when you're under fire. And at the same time, she says, and I found this really interesting, that the war has made her more open and more self-confident.
So I try to stay in contact with volunteers, asking and sometimes practically begging for help. They do help little by little, but of course, I would prefer for our state to provide us with what we need rather than having to go around asking for it.
Of course, this is not about romanticizing war in any way. Lena isn't saying that the fear has gone away. She says she has learned to act despite the fear. Today, her work consists of training, sourcing equipment, and organizing. After the training courses, she travels from one military base to the next. She puts together medical backpacks and tries to get additional medical supplies, but she also relies on volunteers to do that.
I study and conduct research on orthopedic footwear, and I feel especially connected to helping those who have sacrificed their health for the sake of Ukrainians. That is why I try to assist people who need it through the development and production of orthopedic footwear.
Тому, хто цього потребує, із розробкою і виготовленням ортопедичного взуття.
So Lena works at the intersection between the front lines and the home front. She trains soldiers for deployment, but at the same time she also has to make sure that those soldiers have enough medical supplies to take with them in the first place. And there's a similar connection between expertise and practical help in Kyiv with Lilia Chertenko. Lilia is an associate professor in the Department of Fashion Technology at the National University of Technologies and Design. She researches orthopedic footwear. Since the beginning of the war, she has been developing and making shoes for people who have lost parts of their feet as a result of their injuries. That, of course, happens again and again in this war. Soldiers are wounded at the front and lose limbs. We've talked about that several times on this podcast as well. And we'll put some relevant episodes in the show notes for you. Lilia, however, doesn't work with people who need prosthetics. For example, people who have had an entire foot, leg or arm amputated. She focuses on people who have lost only parts of their feet, and she makes custom orthopedic shoes for them. In her workshop, there's a 3D scanner and a pressure-sensitive plate that patients walk across. This allows Lilia to see exactly how the injury affects the way they walk. She then uses that information to create individually tailored shoes. For one soldier with a partial amputation, for example, her shoes were the first pair in which he didn't constantly feel like he was slipping. So for Lilia, this isn't some abstract research project she's working on.
Тому це і жінки, і чоловіки, і, власне, одна людина, вона нічого не зможе.
In reality, one person alone cannot accomplish much. Neither a woman nor a man. But together, we are strong. Through mutual support and communication, different projects emerge, different forms of assistance take shape, and various forms of cooperation develop. It is through this collaboration that we are able to make our contribution to our future victory.
За рахунок яких ми можемо внести свій вклад в нашу майбутню перемогу.
It's really fascinating to see what's emerging in this field and what's possible by now, but there's also a huge amount of money being invested and a lot of research going into it. That's not really the case in the field Lilia works in, and yet these orthopedic shoes are obviously incredibly important. A lot of wounded soldiers simply don't need a prosthetic. They've only lost part of their foot, but they can't walk in regular military boots, and the strain can cause further damage to their health. Other soldiers, meanwhile, remain at the front in their boots for days at a time. We've talked about this several times as well, how increasingly difficult it has become for soldiers to leave their positions because of all the drones in the air. Some soldiers end up spending 200 days in the same position. And you can probably imagine that taking off their boots can be quite a challenge in those circumstances. And when you're wearing a regular boot, the foot itself can obviously also be severely affected by the strain. That's why Lilia is also researching footwear that can be worn under extreme conditions. Her work, however, has so far received only limited support from the Ukrainian government. She relies on private donations, international support, and experts who provide materials or training. That's why Lilia says that no project is ever created by one person alone.
На жаль, впливає на всіх українців. Напевно, що все ж таки по-різному, тому що жінка, вона перш за все мати.
War, unfortunately, affects all Ukrainians. It probably affects men and women differently. A woman is, first and foremost, a mother. And as a mother, I can say that my main task, my main concern is my child. But besides that, I am a working woman, so I try to help those I can at my workplace. And in the time that I have free from work and taking care of my child, I also try to help in some way. Well, actually, if we talk about how the war affects, then yes, in different ways. I think in different ways.
Я теж намагаюся чимось допомогти. Ну, власне, звичайно, якщо говорити про те, як впливає війна туди по-різному, я думаю, що по-різному.
Lilia isn't just describing her own work here. She's describing a network of people who step in where state structures aren't enough. At the same time, she's a mother. Her daughter is now 9 years old, and because of the drone attacks, the two of them repeatedly sleep in the hallway of their apartment in Kiev. The hallway wouldn't protect them from a direct hit, but it can help prevent shards of glass from being thrown into the room by the blast wave. Lilia says,
Насправді війна вплинула таким чином, що ми з початку 22-го року дуже пришвидшились, тому що було дуже
In fact, the war had such an impact that we accelerated a lot from the beginning of 2022 because there was a very high level of customer loyalty to what was created in Ukraine. We worked very hard, there was very rapid growth, but in 2023, under the influence of the war, we made a decision that we would not develop our own production, but would outsource the production of cosmetics. This decision was directly influenced by the war.
Виготовлення косметику на контрактні виробництва, на аутсорс, і на це рішення прямим чином повпливала війна.
That concern exists alongside her work. It doesn't replace it. Lilia helps wounded soldiers while at the same time trying to get her daughter through a daily life in which drone attacks have become part of family life. You may have noticed in the past few days that Kyiv has been coming under heavy attack, particularly over the last few weeks. We were there most recently in June when we met Lilia, and since then, the situation in Kyiv has become even more difficult. There are now very frequent attacks involving ballistic missiles, heavy projectiles with warheads weighing several hundred kilograms. that Ukraine's air defenses, which have been severely stretched because there aren't enough Patriot missiles, are unable to intercept. And that, of course, means that people in Kyiv are facing some incredibly difficult nights at the moment. Alina Maximenko also knows what it means to balance professional responsibility with concern for her family. Alina is 38 years old and lives in the Solomianskyi district of Kyiv. Together with a business partner, she runs the cosmetics brand M2O. The company produces skincare, hair care, and body care products. At first, the war actually accelerated the business. Many customers wanted to support products made in Ukraine, so the company grew very quickly. But in 2023, Alina made a decision that was directly related to the war. The company decided not to expand its own production any further. Instead, it outsourced manufacturing to contract producers. She made that decision because she was worried that their own warehouses could be hit and that everything stored there could be destroyed. It's an example of how the war is changing economic decisions. Growth is possible, but investing in your own production facilities has become much riskier.
Я дуже сильно переживала і дуже важко сприймала початок повномасштабного вторгнення в 22-му році. Нам довелося.
I was very worried. It was difficult to perceive the beginning of a full-scale invasion in 2022. We had to leave for Vinnytsia for 1 month. I really wanted to return home to Kyiv. And at the first opportunity we did it. Then we adapted to the conditions that exist now, to the attacks on Kyiv, which occur very often and very massively. We are very worried. There are moments when there is despair. There are days when you need to recover, gain strength to move on. But in general, we are fighting and believe in a better future. We believe that we will be able to overcome all obstacles and live in a peaceful country.
Для того, щоб рухатись далі. Але загалом, ми боремось і віримо в краще майбутнє і віримо в те, що нам вдасться подолати всі перешкоди і жити в мирній країні.
Alina isn't only talking about economic decisions though. At the beginning of the full-scale invasion, she left Kyiv with her family and spent a month in Vinnytsia, a city in central western Ukraine that has not been anywhere near as heavily affected by the war. There are attacks there from time to time as well, but nowhere near as many as in Kyiv or cities like Odessa, Dnipro, Kharkiv and others. As soon as it was possible, she returned to Kyiv. Today she lives with the attacks on the capital. She talks about days of despair and about how sometimes people need to take a moment to gather their strength before they can keep going.
Я відчуваю, що жінки зараз дуже відповідальні за те, як ми всі живемо в тилу. Дуже багато жінок військових.
I feel that women are now very responsible for how we all live in the rear. There are a lot of female soldiers and they protect us as well. But the way everything is developing here now, businesses, how we take care of our children, how we nurture our family, how we invest emotionally to stabilize the situation in the rear. This falls very heavily on the shoulders of women. It is both difficult and, at the same time, motivating, because each of us has our own mission to do everything possible to continue to maintain a good atmosphere in the country, which will nevertheless continue to exist, flourish, and develop after the end of this war.
Щоб далі зберігати гарну атмосферу в країні, яка все ж таки буде продовжувати квітнути, існувати і розвиватись після закінчення цієї війни.
Alina doesn't experience the war only as a business owner. Recently, a drone hit her apartment building, just 2 floors above her apartment. She threw herself over her 12-year-old son to protect him. And of course, that's a difficult experience for a child. She says he's actually coping with it quite well, but you could also tell that she's naturally very worried about him. At the same time, she's trying to keep her business going. She says that women today carry a particularly large share of the responsibility on the home front.
Ми знаходимося в селі Музиківка. Це ферма коза.
We are in the village of Muzikivka at the Amalthea goat farm. My name is Tetiana Stromnova and I am the owner and founder of this farm. We specialize in goat breeding and cheese production. In the past, we also organized tastings, tourism activities and inclusion programs, but at the moment we are focused solely on goat breeding.
Ну, наразі тільки розведенням кіз.
And they try to create and maintain a sense of normality, to create a nice atmosphere and keep things moving forward, even under these circumstances. Alina doesn't talk about the home front as a peaceful counterpart to the front lines. Kyiv is under attack, businesses have to adapt to power outages, air raid alerts, and changing supply chains. Families have to deal with fear. In southern Ukraine, the economic pressure is even more immediate. In the village of Muzikivka, near Kherson, Tetyana Stramnova runs the Amalthea goat farm. She used to breed goats there, make cheese, offer tastings, and welcome visitors. We've talked about Kherson several times on this podcast as well. It's a city in southern Ukraine that is constantly being attacked by Russian forces. They're basically just across the river from Kherson, which separates the city from the wider southern part of the country. And the city is under constant attack by drones, artillery, all kinds of weapons. Sadly, people are being killed there all the time. And this village was very close to the fighting. When we were there, we could repeatedly hear the sound of artillery in the distance. And Tetyana is now facing the problem that many of the things she used to do are simply no longer possible. There isn't enough electricity to produce cheese. She can barely afford to buy feed for the goats. Customers and tourists, of course, have stopped coming. And Tetyana's husband has been mobilized, which means he was recently called up for military service. So she is now solely responsible for the farm, the animals, and her two children, both of whom have disabilities.
We are in the village of Muzikivka, at the Amalthea goat farm. My name is Tetyana Stramnova, and I am the owner and founder of this farm. We specialize in goat breeding and cheese production. In the past, we also organized tastings, tourism activities, and inclusion programs, but at the moment we are focused solely on goat breeding.
The goats and the cheese were part of a business model that combined farming with bringing people together. They even offered goat yoga classes. You could take a yoga class surrounded by these tiny, incredibly cute Cameroon dwarf goats, which are apparently very gentle and friendly, and do yoga with them. It was really something. She talked about it with so much enthusiasm and clearly loved what she used to do there. The war isn't destroying this business model in a single attack. It's making it impossible step by step through occupation, a lack of customers, power shortages, rising costs, and the mobilization of her husband.
We may seem to be in a quiet and peaceful place, but against the background of all this aggression, things are not very cheerful here. We also have very serious problems with finances, with feed, and we are not making cheese at the moment because we do not have enough voltage in the power grid. Also, because my husband was mobilized, there are no sales, meaning there is no one to take the products out for delivery. Since we have two children with disabilities, I cannot leave them at home by themselves.
This is where war and family life directly intersect. Tetyana can't simply work longer hours, sell her products farther afield, or leave her children on their own. Her husband's mobilization doesn't just change the family, it changes the farm's economic survival as well. In one of her interviews, she says that she now has to do things that men used to do. At the same time, she isn't just a farmer. She's a mother, a business owner, and a caregiver for her children. Tetyana's story shows how war reaches into a farm and into a family. For Natalia Dikul, on the other hand, it changes the context in which she does her job. The oceanographer now works not only on climate research, but also on the dangers that the war has left behind in the Black Sea. Natalia Dikul is an oceanographer at the Antarctic Center of Ukraine. She normally conducts research aboard the research vessel Noosphera, studying ocean currents and climate change in the Southern Ocean. She has been to Antarctica twice. Today, she also works as a UNDP advisor on underwater mine clearance. The Black Sea is contaminated with mines, unexploded ordnance, and other dangerous remnants of the war.
I'm Natalia Dikul, and I'm working as oceanographer for Antarctic Center of Ukraine. Yeah, and also I'm individual consultant for UNDP for underwater demining.
Natalia works in two very different places. In Antarctica, she studies ocean currents and the effects of climate change. In the Black Sea, she's dealing with very concrete dangers to people, ships, and those working in the field. That was actually a really interesting conversation I had with her. I also asked her about her work in Antarctica, where Ukraine not only has a research vessel, but also its own research station. I asked her what kind of discoveries she had made there. She had worked particularly on glaciers, and she said that when it comes to the climate, we've now reached a tipping point, and that essentially we need global action. And I said, well, we were sitting there on the shore of the Black Sea in Odessa, and there was another air raid alert going off. And I asked her, well, isn't this also a global challenge? Don't we have to tackle that together globally? And isn't it kind of bizarre that, as human beings, Instead of doing that, we're fighting each other, not just in Ukraine, but in so many other parts of the world. She just shrugged and said, well, maybe it's because we're stupid. The work of the mine clearance teams is particularly difficult because visibility underwater in the Black Sea is often extremely poor. So Natalia advises them on currents and different layers of water. She helps them understand the conditions under which the men and women are working underwater.
So they are just still growing in amount in the and also different types of the underwater Yuksor and landmines. Just gave me more work, to be honest. And also providing much more responsibility for the work.
The war hasn't replaced her scientific work. It has put it into a different context. The knowledge Natalia needs for marine research is now also being used to deal with the dangers left behind by the war. She says the Black Sea is full of dangers that you can't see from the surface. So the danger doesn't end when the shelling stops. Mines and unexploded ordnance remain a threat even when things are calm on the surface. Natalia also talked about the role of women in the war.
It affects because we are also fighting on the war and we are supporting the peaceful life. So that's two work in one.
These six women don't share one single story. They're not all fighting at the front and they're not doing the same jobs. And of course, their stories don't represent all women in Ukraine. Anna works with the families of missing people and prisoners of war. Lena trains soldiers. Lilia helps wounded people. Alina keeps a business running. Tetiana is fighting to keep her farm and her children safe. Natalia is using scientific knowledge to tackle the dangers left behind by the war. What they have in common is not that they're unafraid. What they have in common is that the war has increased their responsibilities and that they keep taking action even when those responsibilities leave them exhausted. Anna Portowa says that reconstruction will rest on the shoulders of women. Maybe that's less a prediction than a description of the present, because that reconstruction has already begun, in parliaments, workshops, businesses, barns, and laboratories. The open question is whether women will be pushed out of these new areas of responsibility once the war is over, or whether Ukrainian society will be permanently changed by them. That's it for today's episode of our podcast, Krizen Modus. This podcast was produced by Alexander Baumeister, who is also a journalist and works for a radio station owned by the Funke Media Group. If you enjoyed this podcast, please like and follow us. It definitely helps make our work more visible. And feel free to get in touch if you have an idea for one of our episodes. You can reach us at krizenmodus@funkemedien.de. And maybe take a moment to think about the question of what roles people take on when a war changes the roles they once had. What will remain of these changes when the war eventually ends? Take care of yourselves. See you next time. Bye-bye.
In Crisis Mode, the podcast from Conflict Zones with Jan Jessen.
Ein Podcast von Funke.